Great to have you here. We're going to wrestle with this big issue. Let me just start by saying it is a hot topic. It should be fairly obvious. It's a hot topic. I just want to give you a couple of background things about why I regard it as a hot topic, and I dare say this will be something that taps in with you as well. You might go, yeah, I get this. It's a hot topic, this particular issue. It's a hot topic because it's not just about the things we do in church. It touches very deep things with who we are. It touches our very personhood as men and women. It's hot because it creates conflict. At least the way you think I'll deal with it will create conflict. My guess is there's no one here tonight who's thinking I'm going to surprise you with the conclusions. So most people can guess where we're going, and you're vividly aware, I dare say, that what we'll probably end up with will run very much against the grain of contemporary society, against our culture and friends and family and the way they think about these things. And my sense is it will raise for some people some hurts that it may kind of arouse for you some emotional reactions in terms of that's not fair, that's oppressive, that's unjust. There'll be things like this that I dare say will come. Some of it you might even be feeling like I'm a little bit afraid to be here. This is kind of it's almost too hot to be here. I don't want to actually have to think and deal about with these things. Now, let me just say a couple of quick introductory comments along those lines, though. It is okay to differ with me. Please, one of the reasons we run these nights is to communicate as best we're able that the kind of church we want to have here together is not one where there's the party line that you've just got to toe. That actually isn't the kind of church we want to have. We want to have the kind of church where we recognise that we're all working together under the authority of the Scriptures. And so we do that as fallible people who are wrestling together with what the Scriptures say. And so a healthy church is a kind of church where we have the maturity to engage together with our differences. So if you do feel some differences about these issues and where we might land, I want to encourage and nurture amongst us the ability to discuss, to talk, to differ, and not be afraid, and do it with respect with each other and love. Second, we do need to have these discussions aware that the starting point isn't me and EV. The starting point is the Bible. I'm seeking to sit under it, its authority, and I see it as my responsibility to create a church where we all together sit under its authority. We may differ and struggle as we pursue that. I'm fallible. I'm trying to read it like you're trying to read it. I work hard at it. I want us to work hard at it together. But as we talk together and pursue seeing what it's saying, be aware that often if we are reading the Bible correctly, it will say things that you haven't thought. It will, because it's a word from God to a world that's walked away from God, you've got to expect that it will say things that are counter to the way the world thinks. And just because something doesn't sit right with you doesn't mean it necessarily can't be right. That might just be evidence. It might be evidence it's wrong, what you're understanding, but it might also be evidence that you are so shaped by the culture which is against God that you're out of touch with God's mind, and what you hear him say does run counter to your own thinking and make you uncomfortable. So working together in the context of all of that stress and strain in a healthy way to sit under the word. Now, if there is one place in the Bible that does make us uncomfortable, it is this passage in 1 Timothy 2. So let's jump there quickly. I'm actually going to not spend a lot of time on that in this first session. But 1 Timothy, and we've got a lot to wrestle with tonight, but 1 Timothy chapter 2, it's the verse 12, where the Apostle Paul says, "I do not permit a woman to teach or to assume authority over a man. She must be quiet." Or some older translation, "she must be silent." Now, that is a verse that's wrong on so many levels, isn't it? If I can, for a moment, just channel the community and have, you know, this passage is read to me just in my uni lecture, in a cafeteria or something, and someone reads this out. Let me try and channel the sense of the reaction. You believe that? You believe that women are not allowed to do some things because they're a woman? That is to suggest that women are inferior to men? It's to bring us back to an ancient oppression of women, where they're no longer free, and it's just not fair. Why should a woman not be allowed to do something that a man can do? This is just unjust, and it's oppressive. Is that a fair channeling of the community around us? They're very strong reactions, because this kind of issue does touch us deeply, and it touches those issues actually of justice and freedom. I want to show you a little bit more of that in a moment. We've had a very great revolution in the last 40, 50 years. We're the fruit of a world that has fought against a very conservative culture that has crushed women under men. And there's been a movement that has fought against that, and much of that has been fought for has been legitimate and good. We do not want to go back. There is so much that is wonderful about where we are. But together with the great good that has happened in the fight, there is something that's been very far from good. This movement has carried with it a challenge to things of very deep significance. It's carried with it this kind of seed of something with a totally new idea about the nature of humanity. And it is as deep as that. It is quite massive. It really is the issue we'll be just wrestling with tonight is, what is a human? The homosexual debate raises this question for us. The gender debate raises this question for us. What is a human? We are living in a time where there is a view, and as far as I know, and I might be wrong in this, but as far as I know, it's an entirely new view. It's never been held before. The view that humans are infinitely malleable. There is nothing fixed about us or our nature or our personhood. And there is certainly nothing fixed about our gender. Up until February this year, I understand, I'm not a great Facebook fan, but I understand that Facebook, when you put your profile in, gave you two options for your gender, male or female. Do you know how many options there now are for gender on Facebook in America? Well, I thought it was 58, but in America it's now 70 something or other. Yeah. And we're discovering more. but you now don't just have male or female as your options. You have agender, androgyny, bigender, cisgender, two-spirit gender. The list goes on and on and on. And who knows what cisgender is? But the option's there for you. You've got this infinitely malleable way of thinking about the humankind and our gender. Now, that is a massive change in our thinking. There's a number of things that have got us where we are, but I want to suggest to you two big things amongst a number. I mean, a number include things like secularism, individualism and sin. But two things particularly I want to draw attention to that have got us to where we are: the desire for freedom and the desire for justice. Desire for freedom, the desire for justice. Justice for freedom. I think these things bring the heat, actually, to the whole issue. The feminist movement, in its best sense, was fighting for justice. That the woman would have the same rights as men, which hasn't always been the case across our world through history. And that is a good fight. They were fighting, too, for freedom. That the women would be free from oppression. That is good. And we must continue that fight. Now, these principles, though, justice and freedom, have been worked further into the gender issue such that now any expression that a person is constrained by anything is oppressive. And particularly any expression that suggests a person is constrained by their gender. That is perceived today as unjust and oppressive. It is to deny what we regard as basic human rights. The right to be whatever I want to be and to make my life whatever I want to make of it. To suggest that a woman can't teach or have authority because she's a woman is to deny her basic freedoms to be whatever she wants to be, and it is unfair and unjust that she should be limited in this way, and it arouses very great emotion. All of this feeds into the issue of equality. For men and women to be truly equal in the popular mind today, we must, so this new thinking goes, give men and women the freedom to be what they both want to be and to have exactly the same opportunities to be whatever they want to be and to express themselves however they choose. Our mothers put up with the notion that they were constrained by their biology. We won't live with that today. We are fighting for freedom and justice. See, the topic we're dealing with, which when we'll get down to the details of church in the second session, is huge. It is a massive issue. It is touching us as humans very deeply, and we are in the midst of a great ferment about all of this. It's very complex. You see, what are we? Let's start with the Bible. What are we as men and women? Come back with me. Start there, Genesis chapter 1 and 2. Jump all the way back. Some of this will be fairly straightforward for many of you, but it's important that we keep laying these principles down again. The account of the creation, you come to verse 26 of chapter 1. Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish of the sea, the birds, over the livestock, and so on and so forth. So God created mankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. When you start with the Bible, what do you see about humanity? What are we? We are created. We are creatures. The first thing about what is a human? We are creatures. Made by a creator, which has massive implications. I'll give you just a couple. Massive implications. We are creatures, which means life, get this, life isn't ours. Life isn't ours to do with as we please. We were made by someone. We're creatures. Life isn't ours to make and mould to our tastes. As creatures, there are just reality limits because we're creatures. We actually can't be whatever we want to be. And being created beings, we are given limits by our creator. For instance, in chapter 3, you come later to chase it up, but we are barred from the tree of life, which means God himself has put a limit on us that we can't live forever. There are limits to who and what we can be. We can't live forever. Whatever freedom is, get this, whatever the notion of freedom is, it can't be the ability to do whatever we want. Because the reality is we just can't. And if freedom is dependent on being free to do whatever you want, then you'll never be free, do you see? That kind of thinking is foolish and naive and unreality. I've been to a number of school graduations over my years, and I've been to just one recently, and it was interesting to hear the speeches, public school scene, and many of the speeches were, you know, interesting and helpful, but there was a thread that ran through them, which was the end of high school as young men and women are leaving. The inspirational talk was, go out and be whatever you want to be. There are no limits, one girl said. In fact, I think she said, work to your limits and then smash them and go past them. There are no limits. It was very inspiring, and she was a very mature girl, and it was all very wonderful. And that might be okay to be inspired like that, but it's not reality. And the fact is, reality will bite one day, and to the great hurt of all concerned, which is what we've got. We have an epidemic of depression, despair, confusion and disappointment in a world that's been taught that we can be ever whatever we want, only to find that we can't. Freedom is an important topic to get right, actually. Freedom is not being whatever you want to be. It's not possible, and it's not the way to find freedom. Freedom is not even being what you were born to be. We've had some of these discussions in church. Freedom is not being what you were born to be, because what you were born to be was selfish. And so freedom can't even be the exploration of what I am born to be, because that will actually enslave me to my own passions and selfishness. True freedom, the kind that aligns properly with reality, with created reality, is the freedom to be what we were made to be. That's where true freedom is found. Our quest isn't to find out who I am within myself, and then to live the authentic life of living who I am without anyone holding me back. That is the path of self-destruction and perversion. No, true freedom, the quest is to know what I was made to be so that I might shape myself to be what I was made to be. Now, what are we made to be? Like Christ, who is the true image of God. We were made in the image of God. The fall has marred that image, and the work of Christ within us is to redeem and rescue us to enjoy the glory of that image again. That's what we're made to be, and that's what we are to pursue to find true freedom. When the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. That's where freedom is found. We are creatures. We're not infinitely malleable. More. We've been created with a dignity and a worth that no other creature has. Verse 26 of chapter 1, we are made in the image of God himself, in God's likeness. Unlike any other creature, unlike anything else in the universe, we share his image, we bear his stamp. That is a place of great dignity and worth. But you'll also notice, in very importantly there in verse 27, the description of it's very important. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. We are made, what is a human? A human is in the image of God, the image bearer of God, in two sexes, male and female, both of whom share the dignity, worth and value of being God's image bearers. And it's striking, this language is striking in an ancient document that's meant to be reflective of a very oppressive patriarchal society. But at its very beginnings is this stark expression of men and women together sharing the image of God. It is quite striking. And it's something that's carried through the rest of the New Testament, through the Bible, into the New Testament. 1 Peter chapter 3, we'll see. We'll look at 1 Peter chapter 3 just a little bit in a few more minutes actually. But 1 Peter chapter 3 talks about men and women being co-heirs with Christ. Not the male who has the inside running and the female lagging behind, but men and women together, co-heirs, equal together in Christ. Of course, Galatians talks about the wonderful joy of being in Christ, where there is neither male nor female. Those distinctions now no longer count like they once did. Jesus, of course, expressed this in his own ministry, where he walked and partnered with men and women equally. Paul the Apostle, surprisingly to many, talked about women as his co-workers in Romans chapter 16. The Bible stands out in all of this, and it's worth noting it for two reasons. The first one is this. People do keep boxing the Bible as being oppressive. Christians have been oppressive of women, but they've been oppressive of women because they've been flying against the message and shape of the Bible. They've been doing it against the tone of the Scriptures. And in our sin, of course, that will happen. But two, noting this stands out, and it stands out, this is a larger issue I want to unpack a little bit for you. It's noting this, that we are image bearers together, male, female, equally in God's economy. Noting that is important because you need to note the basis upon which we can affirm both male and female sharing equally and being equal. You think with me about this for a moment. On what basis do we affirm the equality of men and women? For the Christian, it's on the basis of something outside of us. It's on the basis of someone outside of us. It's on the basis of God's gift and grant to us to make men and women together his image bearers. It's important to note that because it is a great contrast with the modern position. What is the basis of equality between men and women in modern thinking? Why do we proclaim so loudly that men and women are equal? You take God out of the picture. What other animal cares about equality of its sexes? What other creature is lying around desperately concerned or stalking around fighting over being equal? In the animal world, it is simply might is right. The stronger is the greater. That's, of course, the principle of evolutionary nature. I mean, evolution is a principle, is a whole idea based on the notion of the survival of the fittest. It endorses and encourages the pursuit of the power and greatness of others. Why is it in the human animal we are different? Well, in the reality of the evolutionary world, in the reality of a world without a God, could there ever be equality between the sexes? Just think, if might is right, might is strength, might is power, and there were no God, could there ever be equality of the sexes in the human race? The man would always win. You know, Hermione out of Harry Potter, whose name is... No one knows. Hey?
Emma
Emma Watson. Emma Watson gave a talk to you're actually embarrassed to know the name, aren't you? But Emma Watson gave a talk at the United Nations recently, and who has picked it up noted that that's happened. Yeah, it's quite a significant thing. Now, having a look at her speech is a worthwhile exercise. There's a number of things there I don't agree with and so on, but one of the things she said, which I thought was quite insightful, is that she identified the need for men to be part of the pursuit of the experience of equality in our world between men and women. And she's right. Now, she's right, not for the reasons she listed, though, in my view. She's right because the fact is, equality between men and women cannot be won by women. It needs to be acknowledged by men for it to exist. And I use the language of acknowledge deliberately. Men don't give equality to women. Women in God's created order have equality. They are equal. I don't give it to them. They are equal co-heirs and so on. But if men don't acknowledge that in the world, in our experience of life, women will never enjoy the experience of being equal because of the very great power imbalance that exists by virtue of our strength. Now, all of this begins to become unpopular, but let me pursue it a little further. I want to suggest the only way to establish the true equality of the sexes is to recognise that it's given to us by God outside of us and not found and grounded in any ability within us. The fact that a woman is equal to a man equal to a woman, is not grounded in any ability within the man or the woman. When you do try to find equality in something within us, some ability, but a woman has and a man has, like so often is the case. So often we have all these arguments about women saying women are just as able academically as men. Now, of course, but if we build our equality there, there is a very great unintended consequence that necessarily follows. If we build our equality on the basis that we have equal academic ability, what happens to the intellectually disabled of our world? If equality is grounded in intellectual ability, then those with less and lower intellectual ability are less equal. And suddenly you get, oh, I didn't want to actually bring that in. But if that's where you're grounded, that's what follows. If you find it in some skill that a woman has and a man has, both can really drive as well as each other, both can be as equally aggressive, then you build a world where you have to keep earning equality and proving it. In all of this context, the scriptures, the Bible, the Christian documents liberate us. Equality between men and women is a gift of God that all humans share as image bearers. Women, you don't need to prove or earn equality. You do in a secular world. You do in a world where there is no God. You'll have to fight all the rest of your lives to earn it. But in a world where there's a God who has granted it to us and it is by nature given to us by him, you have it. It is what you are. You are equal. This then gives us the freedom to face what is to many today a very inconvenient truth. The fact that we have equality, we don't have to earn equality, it is given to us by royal grant outside of us. It is just a fact of who we are by virtue of God's gifting. That enables us to have the freedom to face what many today regard as a very inconvenient truth, that men and women are different by nature. Three ways. Physically we're different, chemically we're different, and our roles are different by nature. Let me take you through these quickly and then look at the scriptures over them. Physically, we are different. I mean, in a number of ways, but let me just give you the obvious ones. Men are stronger than women. Now, it's a generalisation. It's a bell curve deal. But the bell curve for men is further across in the stronger end than the bell curve for women. There are some Amazons who will wipe us all out, men here tonight, but generally the strongest man will beat the strongest. You've got the kind of picture, it's men are stronger than women. Chemically, we are different. Men have testosterone, women have estrogen. That has a profound impact on our physiology, our psychology, because we are our physical, chemical bodies. That is part of who we are. You can't divorce who I am locked in a physical body as if somehow they are entirely separate. We aren't ghosts in a machine. We are this unified whole. And the facts of life keep affirming the reality of these two differences, physically different, chemically different. Let me give you a recent article in the Sydney Morning Herald. Once you're starting to think about this kind of stuff again, you notice this all the time when it comes in the papers and what have you. But there was an article written just this last week reacting to men who get angry that women suggest men are more violent than women. Did you get that? And there was an article written by someone reacting angrily that men when women suggest that men are more violent, men are coming back and saying, no, look at all the domestic violence against men. Now listen to this, what this author says. Pick any article on the internet about the violence men commit against women and you can pretty much guarantee that at least one of the first five comments under it will be from a man furious that feminists are ignoring the unreported epidemic of women's violence against men. Suck it up, man. Most of the time it's quite obvious they've not even read the article in question. It's almost like a reflex action, a reflexive jerk, if you will. It's time to stop. This is a rubbish claim. Not only is there no data to support such a claim, but the data that we have proves the exact opposite, and she's right. The Victorian Police crime statistics on offenders for the 2013-14 reporting year says 87% of homicides were committed by men. 87% were committed by men. 98% of sexual assaults were committed by men. 83% of non-sexual assaults were committed by men. Men are prone to violence in a way women are not. Massively. It's massively tilted towards men as the perpetrators. And it's not merely because of nurture. It is a necessary consequence of men physically and chemically, that is where we're prone. You see, we are different physically, we're different chemically, but we're different in our roles as a point of fact. Now, I don't mean to be facetious when I say this, but women are the only ones who can conceive, carry and give birth to a child and then suckle that child. Men cannot do that by virtue of being men. This is a role determined irrevocably by the fact of being a woman. Now, these are inconvenient truths. In fact, actually, I want to suggest to you they're forbidden truths in our community today because they undermine the dominant ideology that we're trying to run our society on, which is we can be whatever we want to be. There are no constraints. There are no limits. Men and women can be whatever they want to be equally. It's just not true. And so I think there is an active censorship going on in the media about the reality of our differences, because if the differences are promoted, noted, talked about, it will threaten the very basis of the equality that we're seeking to pursue between men and women, which was an equality of we can both do the same things. But if we can't, then our society is left wondering, how can we ever be equal? Because it's thrown out God. Now, perhaps for many of us, we might conclude that the dream of being equal and being able to do whatever we want may not be true, sure. But perhaps it just fosters some striving to be more than we otherwise might be, and that surely is okay. But here's the deal. I want to suggest to you tonight it's actually leading to great harm and great hurt, and in contrast with the Bible, it is very unhelpful. The Bible is far wiser and far more helpful. The Bible teaches and assumes and affirms that we are different. Genesis chapter 1, male and female made. When you come into chapter 2, what you get is another account of the nature of men and women. And you get a kind of a closer in snapshot of the creation. And you get there, God creating man first. But you get also, look at verse 18, the Lord God said, chapter 2, verse 18, the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. The woman is made second, and she is made as a helper suitable for the man. She's made differently. And she is brought to the man, and the man sees that this is one with me, but she was taken out of me, and the two are different. It's evident too, the differences in the scriptures are made evident when you come to chapter 3 in the curses by God upon the sin of men and women, the curse is expressed differently. The curse upon the man concerns his work environment, the curse upon the woman concerns her reproductive experiences and her relationship with her man. There are differences there in the expression of the curse. All of this confirms, affirms, assumes that men and women are different. It's important to acknowledge this, and I want to now take you to that passage I mentioned earlier, 1 Peter chapter 3. Come with me all the way over to 1 Peter. Back of your Bible. Yeah, we're doing pretty well. Have a look at verse 7. Now I'm going to... I'm going to read this with some care, and I want you to ask yourself whether or not you have an emotional reaction when I read it. You ready for this? Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives. Treat them with respect as the weaker partner. Any emotional reaction? Oh. Treat her with respect as the weaker vessel is literally the language in the Greek. Now, what does it mean and how dare they say it? Do you know what I mean? Like, weaker? What is the weaker about? Let me unpack this a little bit with you. There is some indication that the word weaker here, it's an unusual Greek word. The word weaker is picked up in the Greek Old Testament in Genesis chapter 8 and verse 11, and it concerns the reproductive facility character of a woman, relates to that area. And I think noting it, that's important and helpful, but noting this, that weaker expression is the character of a woman is very important to note. That difference is very important to note. But let me, before we go on, add a couple of things. It does tap back into the Genesis statement about a helper suitable for him. Do you remember the language I read from Genesis 2 just a moment ago? It's not good for the man to be alone. I'll create a helper suitable for him. What does that mean? What is the woman to be a helper in? What does it mean that she is a helper? Well, what was the task the man was given? Well, he was given the task of filling the earth and subduing it, tilling the ground. So why does God make a helper suitable for him as a woman, not another man? Why didn't God, if the job of the man was to till the earth, to work the earth, to do it, why doesn't God make another man who could do that work with him? Why does he make a woman who is the suitable one? Well, what is it that a woman can help with uniquely that a man cannot? Give birth. Reproduction. Now, that's not all she can help with, but it is uniquely what she can offer that a man can't. You're laughing because I needed to say that. God doesn't make another man because the man doesn't just need help tilling, he needs help doing the filling, you see. What she uniquely brings is the power to bring a child, exclusively, uniquely. Man needs this help, without it he is dead. Without the help of a woman, the human race is finished. And in God's economy it creates a powerful mutual dependency between the man and the woman. Come with me to keep your finger there in 1 Peter 3, but have a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Have a look at verse 10. Very interesting. given the way we often perceive the Bible and the way it thinks about things. But have a look there in verse 10. It is for this reason that a woman ought to have authority over her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor is man independent of woman. For as woman came from man, so also man is born of woman. But everything comes from God. What the apostle is reflecting on is this incredible codependency between the man and the woman because of the unique roles they bring to each other, the complementarity they bring. But that complementarity in the role of reproduction brings a weakness to the woman. Now, it ought to be obvious that pregnancy impacts the strength of a woman massively. Her mobility and her strength. Forgive me for saying this, Kathy. I don't know if you are here, but my wife is an extraordinary woman who tried to teach the kids to skip the day she was due with one of our children. So she's how many weeks pregnant? What were you, 42 or something? I don't know, 56 or... She's very pregnant trying to skip. And there's just a mobility reality that's impaired, so she tripped and broke her leg. The day before she was due to give birth. There is a reality of the reproductive fact that brings a vulnerability and a weakness to a woman that a man does not have. And it's more obvious as the pregnancy goes on, the later stages a woman needs protection. Childbirth itself. Now get this, I can bring a child into the world while I'm digging a ditch, carrying concrete or surfing because I don't need to be there when my child is born. It just happens. But a woman, no baby is born without the mother being there. Do you know what I'm saying? You can't not be there. But I can choose not to be there. Now, there are some superwomen who can throw out a child, jump back up, go back to the career work and be unfazed and press on. But the vast majority of women are impacted then for some time, short time, where it does impair their abilities to. Now, less obvious than these impacts is the menstrual cycle and the relational connectivity of a mother to a child that is different to a man. Now, the point I'm making in all of this is that these things are facts. They are unbendable laws of creation. Men and women are different in very basic ways, but this does not threaten our equality. If our equality is founded outside of us by the sovereign grant of God who has declared and made both to be image bearers equally. It is a fact of our existence, and to live ignoring the fact that we are different will destroy us. It destroys women, men, children and society. Let me take you through these quickly and then throw for some questions. The Bible's wisdom is extraordinary. When women are treated as if they're the same as men in every way and no account is made for the weaknesses inherent in being a woman, women are crushed. Parenting. Now, there are problems both ways for men and women in parenting. But it is far larger for women. A woman who has a child has to be there. Now, whether you call that a weakness or not, it means that it's necessary to teach men to choose to be there. We have to teach men to face the differences between them and see that they have to choose to be there to be with the mother of their child. The man who lives with the notion that a woman has the same freedoms as he has, will crush her. Because if he doesn't know the vulnerabilities of a woman, particularly being a woman, then he won't properly choose what he needs to choose, which is to not act equally, but to love and graciously nurture and care in her vulnerabilities. Let me tell you about work. A woman is necessarily disadvantaged in the workplace because of motherhood. The late stage of pregnancy impacts the ability to work. The pause to have to deliver a child impacts the ability to work. The early days of child rearing impacts the ability to work. A woman has to take time out of the workplace to give birth. if men simply treat her as equal and keep playing as if the field is level between men and women, she will be crushed. Let me explain how this works. Your boss says to the woman, Joe doesn't have interrupted work practices. He's here all the time. You have a child and you're gone. I need someone who's here all the time. But I've just had a child. That was your choice. Joe has not made that choice. I have to go with him. She will keep losing. Unless we as a community make allowance for that reality of difference to make it possible for the field to be level between men and women, do you see? It's interesting, in fact, every government policy to level the playing field between men and women in the workforce is a tacit acknowledgement of the weakness of women, the disadvantage that they operate with by nature of being a woman. Sport. Women's sport is an acknowledgement that we're not the same, and it's for the good of women. And men need to honour that. When men judge it without a recognition of the inherent differences, women lose out. This is a constant plea to men to be gracious, respectful and honour, recognising we're different, but not patronisingly recognising that reality. It is possible to deal with all of this chauvinistically, thinking we're superior, but it is the great sin of men to act like that way when they see the differences. And the answer isn't to insist there are no differences. A fool lives in that world, but rather to own the differences and teach men to honour and respect, care and love in the midst of those differences. Men, do not treat women as if they are the same as you. She isn't. She is a co-heir with you. She is equal with you. She walks alongside of you. But her equality isn't the equality of sameness. Too many young men I see treat girls as if they're just another man and physically shove and have horseplay with a woman that is damaging and is unhelpful. And there's relational brutality that I see sometimes with young men towards women, that you can get away with another man, but it's crushing and bruising and destructive of women. In marriage, there are crucial times a woman has a vulnerability men never have. And men who fail to appreciate this and take account of this, who have imbibed uncritically the feminist credo of equality equals equivalence, hurt their wives when they expect them to be just like men. There are significant times men need to protect uniquely their wives and take regard for the differences and do it without patronising. You see, the Bible won't let us live in the world of the survival of the fittest, and thank God for that. Because we are different, we need to acknowledge it in grace and humility. Women, we'll be having questions in a moment, but can I encourage you not to deny the truth, not to ignore this truth about yourself. You aren't like men, equal in being equivalent. Your equality is established outside of you by the Lord God's grant upon both of us as equally being co-heirs. So face without fear the truth of your weaknesses and differences. You have a vulnerability men just don't have. You need to acknowledge this and not refuse to acknowledge it because it feels like you aren't free and not equal. No, don't be like that. Example, you are vulnerable to the predatorial sexual aggression of men in a way that men just aren't. It's just a reality of who we all are together. Now, that's not to condone the sinfulness of men who are predators. It's not at all. But it is to encourage wisdom. I'll give you another example too. There is a woman, you have a vulnerability with a child that in a way that a man does not. So, young girls, if you sleep with men outside of marriage and have become pregnant, you will bear the consequences of that in a way that the man never will. Know that about yourself. You see, knowing all this is necessary for a healthy society. Education. If we fail to account for the differences between men and women in education, women have lost out, men will lose out if we don't acknowledge we're different in the way education occurs. Women lose. Women who spend years in that maze of the ideological lie of thinking they can be whatever they want and do whatever men can do, pursuing a career like a man, know that it will cost you in a way that it will never cost a man. Because biology isn't feminist. You have a narrow window of reproductive opportunity. Men don't have a narrow window. They can be having kids when enrolled in Terrigal Glen. I mean, we can be siring children, but women, you've got, there's a few years, and if you don't then it's out of your control. You might like to wish that you could have a child any time, whenever you choose, but it isn't so. God has not made us like that, men and women. Childbirth itself suffers, interestingly, when you live with the foolish notion that we're all the same. It's no accident that in more liberated societies, more feminist societies, the birth rate's lower. Now, why should that be so? There's a number of reasons, but one of the reasons is that when hardcore feminism dominates our minds and hearts, where women can only be equal by being the same, then there is a lower desire to have children, because having a child necessarily reduces your ability to compete in the marketplace. And so as a society, Western civilization, we're killing ourselves because we're not acknowledging the reality of our differences that God has given us by his goodness. All of this forces us to an acceptance that we aren't in control, not absolutely. We are, as humans, what are we? We are at the mercy of forces outside of ourselves. The dream of freedom that thinks true freedom is to be whatever you want to be is just that. It's a dream, it's an illusion, and it's a lie. And it will destroy us. We don't rule the world, we don't even rule ourselves. What are we? We're a mist that's here today and gone tomorrow. We might kick against this and keep insisting it can't be so and hating it, but it will destroy us. Or we find humility and peace with it. God is God, I'm not. He has made me with fixed limits. Find out what we are by his design, a good design by a good God, and find the freedom of being what we're made to be. Not the freedom of thinking we can be whatever we want. Now, friends, there is a very quick rush through a very big issue. And so I'm going to pause. I think we're kind of just a few minutes, we're about 5 minutes up, but give a couple of minutes of questions. You want to ask anything? You want to push back? You want to give us any thoughts? Go for it. We'll be doing 1 Timothy next. Nope. Oh, right at the back, I think.
Hi, I've got lots of questions,
yep.
But I will try and choose one. You mentioned the graduation speech.
Yep.
What would you have said, apart from being evangelical, of course, what would you have said at the graduation?
Yeah. Yeah. I would have called on us to recognise the realities of who we are and the greatness of what God has given each of us that is different, and the differences being wonderful and good, and to not try to pursue to be someone you can't ever be, but seek to, I would want to call us to honour God for being what he has made us each to be, and to be the very best in the circumstances, a mix of priorities and concerns that you each have, be the best in that context, to honour God in the way you live in that context. There's something of what I might say. You've just asked me with 30 seconds, 10 seconds thought, but yeah. I think we do need to keep communicating the message that, you know, Ian Thorpe comes and says, look, if you could do what I do if you just work like I've worked. I haven't got size 16 feet. He was born with flippers, do you know what I mean? And arms that are like an albatross. Do you know what I mean? A body mass index that means he drifts on the water. He doesn't sink in it. It's just we just can't all be those different things. And continually putting it out there as a sense source of inspiration actually creates devastation. Initial excitement, enthusiasm, but devastation when reality strikes. Yeah, there's a quick thought. You want to ask anything else? Oh.
Sorry, it's your wife.
You can't even see her. Yeah.
If you are a woman who doesn't have children, do you think in some way that means you're not quite at the same level of weakness and so things are a little different for you?
Yeah, 1 Peter 3, it's the husband living with his wife, particularly on view there. But no doubt there are certainly broader impacts in the world of a woman that go beyond just the childbirth situation. But yeah, it's not as those reproductive things don't impact as much. Certainly that's quite true. Yeah. So was there a further question to that? What did she say?
Sounded great.
Sounded great. What a wonderful wife. Yeah. Yeah, right at the back, I think there's a hand.
So I know you've touched on the physical side of it, but what about, what are your thoughts on the saying that behind every great man there is a greater woman? And what about the thoughts that women can outthink or outmaneuver men, not necessarily physically?
Yeah, look, I think they're funny and fun, but I think they're unnecessary and can ultimately be unhelpful. So what I mean is this, I don't want us to live with the impression that for a woman to feel she can be equal, she has to prove that she can outthink. I don't need you to prove that. God has given us each intellectual capacities and abilities that have various strengths, and women have a range of abilities and men have a range of abilities, and we have strengths and weaknesses, and they're different, and different women are different. I just don't even need to fuss about it. I just deal with the person in front of me in that context. And to try and prove that a woman can outthink or talk, it's nice, and I dare say it might be in the short term kind of affirming, but it's just unnecessary and long term unhelpful. Whether a woman can outthink me or not is irrelevant. She's equal to me and I treat her with respect. I hope she treats me with respect, you see. And behind every great man is a greater woman? No. It's not true that behind every great man there's a greater woman. It's not true at all. It's many times true. Mostly true. Well, I don't know. Who would know? Behind me is a great woman. Next to me is a great woman. Do you see? Some of that can be kind of, it can be fun and funny and sound, but you've got to be cautious about those lines, I think. Is that, you know what I'm saying? Keep finding our equality elsewhere then in proving that we are smarter or as smart or stronger or as strong. It's just not found there. It's just, we'll go here and we'll go up there. Thank you. So actually, just another thought. It is often the case if a couple are going to have a family that the woman will almost necessarily, or I say almost, but almost necessarily be, well, will necessarily be impacted by the birth of children in a way that a man won't be. So she will have to sacrifice the engagement in the work, in the marketplace in a way that the man won't have to. And so there is an importance, I think, that perhaps you are picking up about acknowledging the partnership there. But just be cautious and careful about imagining that the really great thing is him in the marketplace and she's enabled him to do it. Isn't that wonderful? No. The really great thing is raising kids. Really great thing is raising a family that know and love the Lord and become useful and healthy citizens of society. That is a really great thing, which the man has an opportunity to work and earn so that they can do that. The wife is enabled then to be part. That's how the focus is kind of in and out, not out with her, do you see? So I just want to even challenge that whole paradigm, actually, that you get behind every great man is a greater woman. Do you see?
Why is there abuse in so many Christian marriages that churches tend to just not deal with?
Yeah, look, I think there's abuse in every, it's not just Christian marriages, it's marriages generally. And what I think the statistics indicate that amongst born-again evangelical Christians, genuine seekers after a genuine Christian walk, these things are far lower as a rate, but they exist and are real. There ought not be acceptance of it or toleration of it, not at all. It's wrong that it is, and it's the character of the fallen world we live in and the complexity of marriage. It is very hard outside of a marriage to engage helpfully into it. Very tricky business. And I don't think people often realise how tricky it is. It's, how do I... But, yeah, it's a great concern. Now, I think we'll have one more question and stop.
Hello? Hey. 1 Peter 3:7. You know how you were saying that weakness, the kind of the first thing you leapt to was childbirth. Is there a reason that was the thing that you picked, and is there a greater meaning to weakness?
Yeah, look, thank you for the clarification. The reason I went there is because I understand, the word for weakness I know is a very unusual word, but I understand by those who have done more work in these areas than I have that the unusual word for weakness actually, it's used in Genesis 18, it's actually in the Greek of the Old Testament, it's used in the context of the reproductory world. So that's why I've connected it into there. And so I take it that the weakness, therefore, is particularly related to that area, rather than just women are weak. You know, because I'm not sure that is appropriately true. Yeah, but there is a particular weakness related to them being in the helping realm. Yeah.